I'm Eric Jansen. You're tuned to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Tonight, sports, specifically queers and homophobia in sports. My four guests all come at the subject from different corners. We begin with one of the most courageous. In 1975, former pro football player David Kopay came out as gay just 3 years after leaving the NFL. His revelation rocked the sports world, and his book, The David Kopay Story, An Extraordinary Revelation, climbed the New York Times bestseller list and is still in print. Yet now, 37 years later, despite all the gains we've made, only a handful of major sports athletes have followed him out of the closet. Why? Let's hear from the former 49er himself. Joining me by phone from his home in Southern California is former 49er running back David Kopay, who will be here in San Francisco as official race starter of the Front Runners' 33rd annual Pride Run on June 23rd. David, welcome to Out in the Bay.
It's great to be with you.
So, David, when did you first know that you were gay, or at least that you were attracted to other men? I'm wondering, you know, the high school locker room?
Probably when I was a young kid, 11, 12, 13 years old even. But, you know, that I think that's kind of a normal thing, even earlier than that for a lot of kids.
And what was it like for you? I assume you played ball in high school as well as college.
Right. I was a three-sport letterman in both high school and track, basketball, and football. And then went on and lettered at the University of Washington, captained the team in 1964.
And so what were your experiences as a player? I mean, at the time, had you identified what it meant to be gay when you were
well,
on these high school?
I didn't identify what it meant to be gay. I didn't even really use those terms. You know, I just kind of had it in the back of my mind that it was not something very good because I'd been trained not to think of it very positive. But I fell in love with a fraternity brother, and that motivated me. Even though I had a lot of ability, I wasn't naturally very tough. And then once I got really learning to be pretty tough out on the football field, I was able to rise to the top and get elected as a co-captain of the team and went on to go to the Rose Bowl. But it really was all in getting the graces of my fraternity brother and love, who went on to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. And this was all at University of Washington, is that right?
Right. It was a very natural kind of experience about hiding because I could prove myself and my well worth by playing, and as long as I kept going, I had a sense of self worth and being and then I also had the attention of some people that I really cared for, even if it wasn't a totally valid situation.
So when you went to the pros, then as a pro football player. What was it? Did you feel like you had to hide your homosexuality?
Of course. At those times, the word faggot and words like that were often used in the locker room. Now, nobody ever uses those words, and rarely that's used in the locker room. I mean, guys would come down on each other now if that was stated out in the locker room.
And, that's some progress then.
There is progress there, that's for sure.
So this is, David, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is 1964, right, when your first team was the 49ers?
Right, right. So I spent 4 years with the 49ers and then Detroit, and I had the great luck of being involved there with Alex Karras, and Alex was a very bright guy, and he kind of indicated right on, he had a sense that he knew that I was gay, and yet he was accepting of it. And he was accepting of it even when I was hurt and really struggling and not having my own sense of self-worth because I could hardly play to the level that I thought I could play after they had traded a couple of high draft choices for me. I was really despondent because I had torn up my knee, and the doctor at that time, a gay doctor in the closet, had never told me about it. And I had to play the whole year on a half a leg, and I was totally, totally despondent and had no hope. At the end of the year, I was really, really almost suicidal, and Alex knew it, but he didn't know what it was all about. And then someone, towards the end of the year, as soon as the season was over, they operated on my knee, And then later on, I had heard that Lombardi was interested in picking me up and getting a chance to go to the Washington and getting some hope again. to play and to be worthwhile, and that also helped my mental health because I kind of had hope, you know.
And Washington was a hot team at that time?
Pardon me?
Was Washington a particularly hot team at the time?
Well, it wasn't. It was a struggling team, but Lombardi had just taken the reins over there, and they were an up-and-coming team. And so I was really excited about getting a second chance. And then I ran, and I was also told by a straight friend that I'm going to love a special teammate, and that teammate happened to be Jerry Smith, who really facilitated really bringing me out of the closet. And by his warmth and acceptance and love, and so I played there in Washington and did fairly okay. I mean, it wasn't I wasn't any star or anything, you know. But it still, Washington was the disco era, and it was kind of a mixed area between straight and gays, and you could kind of hide then. But of course. Once I was out of football, though, and I lost the sense of even having the chance to coach, that then I really became suicidal and desperate and really anxious and went to therapy. And, I mean, it was really, really terrible.
I want to get back to the coaching thing in a second, but first I want to ask, what was it that prompted you to come out of the closet, and what was the reaction initially?
Well, the reaction was in that time nobody ever heard of a gay football player or anybody in a sports world that was gay, and it was pretty dramatic. It was amazing, but what prompted me to come out was seeing an article about Jerry, and there he was again, kind of hiding as a bisexual football player, but not being named, and things we had often talked about, and now I happened to be in Washington at the time. Taking this secondary kind of job that I thought I could create, or a business of doing pub mirrors for the National Football League. And once I didn't have my heart in it, and I was really, really desperate. And again, I reacted as the athlete that I was. I wasn't any hero. I wasn't any, it wasn't a heroic act on my part. But when I saw that article, and I just said, you know what? I got to bust this wedge, you know, and it really, it wasn't quite that clear, but I'd been busting wedges for 9 years in the National Football League before that, and it wasn't an unnatural thing. It was like a natural act, and it was like what's going to happen with kids today. Kids are going to continue to play and be involved in the lower sports, and it's going to be naturally for them to get on to college as an openly gay ball player, and then from there they're going to be so good. They're going to go into the pros, and I know that's going to happen, and it's not going to be another 35 years before it happens. So anyhow, I'm so happy to be able to be associated with your program there and with the great people that you got on today, and I do a little bit what I can when I'm asked to.
Great. Well, that's a good segue then, because I'm just thinking we need to introduce our other guests here. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm speaking with former 49er David Coppe, a running back in the NFL for 9 years before coming out as gay in 1975, 3 years after he retired from pro football. He's with me by phone from Southern California. With me in the studio are three other guests with distinct experiences and views on gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender athletes. Helen Carroll was a national championship basketball coach for the University of North Carolina, Asheville, and a collegiate athletic director for 12 years. She now devotes her time to fighting homophobia in sports by directing the National Center for Lesbian Rights Sports Project. She works closely with major national sports organizations, including the San Francisco 49ers, the Women's Sports Foundation, and the National Collegiate Athletic Association. Welcome, Helen.
It's good to be here.
Roger Brigham writes the Jock Talk column for the Bay Area Reporter, gay newspaper in San Francisco, and was the first openly gay sports editor for a U.S. metropolitan daily newspaper, the Anchorage Daily News, 30 years ago. He says, among other things, that queer people do themselves a disservice by being afraid of sports. Thanks for being here, Roger.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
Catherine Holland is a longtime active member of the Frontrunners here in San Francisco, and before that in Sacramento. The Frontrunners is an international affiliation of LGBT running clubs that host weekly runs. The San Francisco chapter was the first, and it puts on San Francisco's annual Pride Run. Catherine will be bringing us the perspective of LGBT recreational and social athletic clubs. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So very quickly, speaking of the Pride Run, it's a 5 and 10K run in Golden Gate Park on June 23rd, Saturday of Pride weekend. Out in the Bay is the beneficiary this year. It's the first time in the run's history that a public radio show benefits. So sign up to run, tell your friends, or walk, volunteer, help queer radio at the same time. Find info on our website, outinthebay.com. So I'm tossing this out to all of you. How many prominent, you know, nationally known, major league, household name, whatever, however you want to put it, LGBT sports figures can we name who've come out since David Kopay in 1975? I mean, I can think of a couple. I'm not a major sports guy myself, but, you know, there's the basketball player, John Amici, Billy Beane, the baseball player, Martina Navratilova.
Glenn well, Ford. Certainly Billie Jean King.
Yeah, oh yeah, okay. Can't forget her. It's funny because I think of her like she just seemed obvious all along, and I never thought of her as coming out, but I guess she had to at some point.
Well, it's interesting, of course, in women's sports, you've got the stereotype that women who play sports are all lesbian, and that's not true, of course, as far as the number of women who have come out and vocally talk about what it's like to be out. I mean, certainly we've had Cheryl Swoopes in the last number of years. Who has spoken, and there are a number of women players who are out, but of course they're not covered in the media very much, so it's hard to have them as a household name.
Yeah,
but it was women.
One of the first.
Hold on a second, David. Go ahead.
Yes, Helen, but it was women who gave the straight gay women who gave the straight women the opportunity to advance and to continue to play the sports, right?
Yes, I always say when I'm talking about Title IX that when Title IX came into effect, we invited all the straight women to join us, and now we've got millions and millions of athletes everywhere.
Roger, go ahead.
Of course, one of the first to come out was Glenn Burke.
Right, thank you for reminding me of him, and he's a local boy as well, right?
Absolutely, best athlete that ever went to Berkeley High School.
My alma mater. Tell us a little bit more about Glenn Burke, for those who don't know. He played with the Oakland A's, right?
Yes, he was with the Dodgers, and as people started to become aware that he was gay, there was a lot of pressure on him to get a beard, to get married, and they kept telling him they would give him more money if he would do that, and he didn't play along with that, so he got traded to the A's. But it was always a very strained relationship for them. He felt everybody knew who he was, but they just didn't talk about it. They kept their blinders on. He's a kind of a sad tale about how far we have come, and it's why I said that it's why we do ourselves a disservice when we don't, our media does not pay attention to LGBT sports. Glenn Burke was out in 1982, came out just a few months after I did, but never was really recognized as a hero in the LGBT community, and later on died in the mid-90s of AIDS, impoverished, did not have a very happy life afterwards.
Yeah, there's a great documentary made about him about a year ago or
yes.
so, which I saw, and it was it was just really sad. I mean, he was broken, had AIDS, and was just really sick and like you said,
and what
poor.
What society wants to do to gay people, and that's what it's done for so many years. But people like Helen and Roger and the Catherine, everybody there is saying no, this is not going to happen anymore, and I'm tired of all the crap, and we're here to say so, you know.
So, Roger Brigham, when you came out as gay, you were a sports editor at the Anchorage Daily News, and on the side, you were also coaching high school boys in wrestling. So what happened, what inspired you to come out, and what was the reaction, you know, 30 years ago in the early 1980s in Alaska?
Well, I can say what inspired me to come out in two words, David Kopay.
Okay, well, that's great.
I mean, you know, if you're a young gay man, you saw that book cover with his face on it, and
The body. Talk about the mandate photo that you had in last week's BAR. The mandate cover, David Kopay was smoking hot. I've yet to meet you. Maybe you're still smoking hot.
He is.
No.
When he came out, I was just finishing up in college, and I was still at that stage where I thought I was the only one in the world in sports. I mean, I knew there were other gay people, but I didn't know other people with my interests in sports. And so at the time I came out, I was, some ways my situation was parallel to David, and other ways it was very different. David had just finished a professional career as an athlete. I was an amateur coach and a professional journalist, just starting off. My position was very different because of all the rumors, you know, the things that would get thrown at the gay community at the time where, oh, you're out there to recruit young men and so forth. And so I knew that when I revealed my sexuality, it had the potential to possibly be fatal for me. But I decided I was going to do it, that it was important that if people wanted to know, I would tell them. So anytime a coach or I went in, I told my editor at the office and soon everybody at the paper knew I was gay. Whenever coaches asked me about it, I said, yes, I'm gay. And I never ran from anybody into any problems from anybody. You have to understand that at the time, there were no anti-discrimination laws. This was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's when the military was in active witch hunts. And in fact, they kicked my boyfriend out of the Air Force. That this was right when we had the rumors of a new gay cancer, and nobody knew what the cause of it was other than the fact if you were gay, you were likely to get it. That's what the atmosphere was like when I came out. So I didn't come out with a great big write a column like a lot of journalists have done since then. I did not make myself the story. I really wanted to be one-on-one talking to people and showing them it's completely normal.
Mm-hmm. Helen Carroll, you said that you, I know that you work with national sports organizations, professional teams like the 49ers. What do you do with these teams? How do you work with them?
Well, and when you were talking about, Dave, when you played for the 49ers, how different this is. I mean, a number of years ago, we actually had a workshop with the owners and the leadership and the coaches of the 49ers just talking about the diversity issues. And what if you have a gay player on your team? And what is the role of the quarterback or your team leaders in the locker room to have a respectful atmosphere? And just having the conversation and not ignoring it. We've done that with the 49ers. And certainly within football, there's been some training at the rookie camps and in baseball. I mean, it's kind of come a lot. It's got a long ways to go, but the improvement has just been unbelievable, just unbelievable. And I really think in like the last 2 years, it's accelerated with groups, support groups that have been formed and established, whether it's Ben Cohen or Hudson Taylor's ally groups. There's a young woman named Nevin Capel in Philadelphia who has started a group that's working with collegiate-age women. The NCAA has an entire division that works on inclusion issues, and LGBT is huge. They have transgender policies now. You know, we've just seen an outbreak across all areas in a really positive realm. Most young people who come out now can find a place or somebody to talk to. I mean, there's certainly still those young people who don't. But the majority, you know, can go to Sid Ziegler at OutSports, can have Roger coaching them in wrestling, can join the Front Runners and have a whole community there. And it's just, you know, it's very exciting to see where we're moving at this time.
So let's go back to that question I asked in the beginning. Why is it that so few major sports athletes have come out? Is there still a huge financial burden, worried about endorsements, or, for example, losing endorsements? Is there, what are the fears that still exist, and why we don't see more? They must be there.
Well, I think each individual has their own fear of what it would be like to be the very first coming out, a Jackie Robinson kind of thing. And Jackie wasn't treated that great all the time.
Right.
So
let's be clear here. The folks who have come out so far, well, I take that back. With the exception of Billie Jean King, as far as the major pro team sports, they've all come out at this point after they've left the sport, right?
Right, and I think what we're going to see, for example, what's happening with the NCAA and collegiate athletics, I mean, I think we're going to have some out great college athletes that are going to be drafted by the pros, and they're not going to be coming out in the pros. They're already going to be out when they get there.
Right. Pros are going to have to take it or leave it.
Right. I mean, I go to Stanford tomorrow because they're recognized as one of the top 10 LGBT-friendly sports programs in the country, and you know, we're going to be talking to those athletes about what does that mean. Uh-huh. So we're going to see that kind of thing happen.
Actually, Rick Welts, who's the openly gay chief operating officer with the Golden State Warriors, spoke to this point when he was hired there. He thinks that in pro sports that they don't have a culture to talk about things like this. I think this is where basically, the administration has to realize that at this point, it's the problem. Homophobia with the athletes is not the problem at this point. The athletes who have come out have always expressed that all they've gotten is great support. And they've usually said, oh, and some of my teammates do it, but they were always fine with it.
So it's the organizational culture rather than
yes, it's the organizational culture. And that's why these new initiatives to get the dialogue going and make them understand that you have gay players, you have lesbian players, you're just not very welcome, you're not very open about it, and you've got to catch up with the times.
It's definitely a learning curve. I mean, coaches don't go into coaching already have a background on how to talk about sexual orientation issues. You know, what do you do? What do you do with your team, with a team member or with a teammate? How do you have that conversation? And that's where many of us go around and help people know how to have the conversations.
For instance, when I came out in 1982 as a coach, I never told my athletes I was gay. I thought at that time it would be so explosive. And if any of them cared and came up and came out to me, I wouldn't have known who to tell them to talk to. There were no support groups there. There was no internet there. And I think the most important thing we need to get across to people now is that we are harmed more by fear of homophobia than we are of homophobia itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Our topic tonight, queers in athletics and homophobia in sports. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Helen Carroll, director of the Sports Project at the National Center for Lesbian Rights, Roger Brigham, sports writer for the Bay Area Reporter, and frontrunner Catherine Holland. And joining us by phone is former NFL player David Coppe, the first major pro team sport player to come out way back in 1975. Catherine Holland, let's bring you into the conversation. You've been sitting here. I feel bad.
Oh, that's okay.
you know, the reason I asked you to come in is because Catherine and I are both members of the San Francisco Frontrunners. And I know that for me, when I first came out, it was important. I was actually a bicycle racer in my high school days, so I came into the gay world through a bicycle club, different spokes, and then, you know, when I got to be a runner, joined Frontrunners. It seems like it's a really important avenue for a lot of folks who want to explore the gay world, perhaps for the first time, but are scared of the bars. So, Catherine, what was your experience? What brought you to the Frontrunners?
Well, when I came out 18 years ago, first, I went to the bars. That's where everyone went. It was before meetup groups and online groups and things like that.
This is in Sacramento, right?
Yes. And so I found Frontrunners after about a year of going to the clubs and stuff. That just wasn't me. And I thought, gosh, that's the only way I'm going to find someone, find my people. But I went to Frontrunners and had my blonde ponytail. And they all thought I was a straight woman who was coming to run with them. And it was really monumental for me to be standing there in the light of day, mm-hmm. not in a dark nightclub, but right out in public, in the light of day, to be standing side by side with other gay people and running with them. And people would say, what's this group? And I responded, honestly, this is a gay and lesbian running group. That was huge for me to mm-hmm. be doing that.
Right, right, right. I was curious to know, all of you, if you have any, what are your perceptions of what these kinds of social, recreational athletic groups for gay and lesbian folks have done? Softball leagues come to mind, certainly. David?
Yeah, well, I think they've given so many young folks and parents and society hope that there's going to be a future for everyone. You know, Harvey Milk always talked about that. Everybody needs hope, and hope is the key, and I certainly it was the key for me, and I felt, well, at least when I was doing something, you know, do something. Coach Lombardi always used to say that, you know, and I swear to this day that I think maybe Coach Lombardi knew about Jerry and knew about myself. I'm not sure, because we certainly were out in the clubs and, you know, and mixed in different, both straight and gay groups, and I don't think he much gave a damn, because as long as you did your job, that's what was important, you know. He also had a gay brother, and he also worked with an administrator in the front offices, Joe Blair, and David Slattery was his assistant general manager. They were all gay. So, I mean, visibility is a key thing out there to break down barriers, but it does give other people hope. And certainly with folks like you have here on the show, it's giving a whole lot of both parents and young people a chance to understand things and be themselves, which is so, so important.
Roger, did you want to say something?
I think there are two things here also. And it's the fact that LGBT sports groups are participatory groups, whether they get to an elite competition level or they remain recreational, they're participation groups. And this has two effects. One, there's so many athletes, young boys and young girls, who did not play high school sports or college sports because they knew they were different. They may or may not have known why they were different, but they were different, and they were afraid to take something else on. But they always wanted to. And so these groups give them a chance to test themselves and gain a lot of self-value. And the other thing is it gives them formed families. This is very important because people coming out, or the biggest fear they have is the loss of family love, the loss of community love. And in these sports groups, many people have come out, joined the clubs because they know that straight people are allowed to join. And it's only while they've been in the club and they've made those friends there that then they've decided, okay, I'm going to come out.
Catherine, why have you been? You've continued to be really active in the club ever since I've known you. Why do you still, you know, do it?
You know, I feel like it is a family to me. When I go, I get all the hugs from people there. I get all the support, and just it makes my week. You know, when I go there and I see all my friends, and I think to show up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, you couldn't be having too wild of a night the night before. So it's just a really good group of people.
Forces you to have a healthy start to your weekend. Saturday morning's 9 o'clock at Stowe Lake in Golden Gate Park. Quickly, I'm thinking about it. If you're listening, you're not a runner, but you want to do something athletic. Where would someone find information about gay and lesbian athletic clubs? You know, the more social kind. I suppose there's a listing in the BAR, but are there resources online where people can look for those things?
Well, in the Bay Area, the first place to go would be to go to the Team SF website, which is teamsf.ning.org. .com. That's most of the local clubs are members there. But really, and I don't know of a single place that has a listing of all the different clubs, but if you do searches, things will pass up like SF Fog Rugby, Front Runners, East Bay and San Francisco Front Runners. You've got Golden Gate Wrestling Club. You've got Tsunami Swimming, which has water polo and synchronized swimming also. Yeah. I mean, there's a richness. If there's golf, there's a golf club there, a gay golf organization. So if you do an internet search with keywords, you'll find them.
Great. You know, as I said, this half hour is going to fly by, and indeed it did. Helen Carroll, I want to have you back after this big summit you're going to at Nike, which you said the middle of the month, talking about LGBT sports and things like that. So let's plan to have you on after that time. You've been listening. Oh, excuse me. Where am I here? I want to thank my guest, former pro football player David Cope. He joined us by phone from Southern California. Helen Carroll, who leads the sports project at the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Roger Brigham, sports writer for the Bay Area Reporter. And San Francisco frontrunner Catherine Holland. We've been talking about queers in athletics and homophobia in sports. You can learn more about the sports project Helen leads at the National Center for Lesbian Rights website, nclrights.org. The Bay Area Reporter is also online at ebar.com, ebar.com, and learn more about the SF Frontrunners at sffr.org. Oh, also lots of information at outsports.com. If you missed any of the show, it'll be posted on our website later tonight or tomorrow, outinthebay.com. We've been talking also a little bit about the SF Frontrunners Pride Run, June 23rd in Golden Gate Park. David Cope will be there as the race leader, starter. You can meet him there, perhaps. Events include a 5K and a 10K run. Proceeds benefit Out in the Bay this year, so come on out and run for Queer Public Radio. More info on our website, outinthebay.com, or sign up to run or volunteer or help put on the run at the website, sfpriderun.org. A quick thanks to Pride Run sponsors, Coldwell Banker, residential realtor Catherine Holland, Dan Jorenstad of Wells Fargo Advisor, Kaiser Permanente, Safeway, and Bud Dylan via the Don Ostreicher Needy Divas Fund. I want to thank David Latulippe for being our engineer tonight. Thanks also to KALW for studio use and airtime. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. Learn more about Holly on her blog, hollymead.tumblr.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening. ¶¶